next hour, tech headlines, news, info, music and insights on the world of work. Are you a slave to work? Do you need to be a slave? How do you make the work environment more inclusive? How to avoid organisational change being solely reactive? What is a leader? Should we work with others as equals? Do we want to? Will we remain human or will we be cyborged? What is it to be human? How can we make work more human? Mwah is coming up shortly. Yes, mwah, making work absolutely human. Yes, mwah is a company and their CEO will be with you shortly. And a very warm welcome to Rhonda. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Are you a great showman?
No, but I do love a great show. I'd like to be.
I know you absolutely love The Greatest Showman and all the music. And why is that?
I think it's just really great fun. I like a lot of musicals. I'm really funny. I like things between punk, country and show tunes. So that's my repertoire. But it's
quite a mix there.
It's so great. Yeah, it's mixed and it's the spice of life, isn't it? It's really fun. But it's such an uplifting, wonderful movie. It's just so cool.
Yeah, and how do you think the music captures the spirit of humanist sentiment?
Oh, I mean, there's obviously that level of the fact that they're portraying all these people who are, by definition, misfits for society, but actually are the show. And I loved and love each other, and I think it's just such a lovely story about that.
Mm. What is it like to be human at work?
You know, are you human? Really good question. Yeah, well, I'm personally not, of course. No, I am actually. I'm human. I think it's just being yourself, and I know that that sounds really flippant, but there's so much conversation around. You know, it's sort of an element of just you can turn up, and people are waiting for you to turn up and do what you need to do there. And I think for a long time we've talked about inclusion programs or programmatic diversity and things like that, and actually what people want is not to turn up and be part of a program. They just want to turn up because they're an important part of the team and they want to be part of it.
And with, you know, varying
community connection.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, so your company Moi you know, has this absolute humanity push. So what is absolute humanity for you, because that is actually in the Moi name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I think what we try to do every day is sort of think about work quite differently. Work's always been this thing: here is my life, and there is my work over there. But actually, work is a really important part of life, and so it's our contribution. It's how we get to play with the rest of society. It's how we join the economy. There's lots of good things about work, and we know we do a lot of work with people with disability, and we know what happens when people don't get included and allowed to come to work. I mean, they just become sad. They're not part of society, and it's such an important
element. There's a lack of purpose. Yeah, it's a lack of purpose.
Lack of purpose, lack of involvement, lack of community, lack of connection. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that just you lose if you don't get included in that. I think it's a super important part of life, and that's what we sort of try to do. Having said that, we work with probably some of the most the really cool parts of technology, and the difference probably is that instead of going, I have some technology, let me force it on you, we sort of go, how would technology actually enhance this experience, or how would it change work for people, or how would it allow us to include more people or change attitudes and mindsets? So we use technology to solve really human problems as opposed to take technology and squash it on top of a human.
And are we working too hard? So I noticed that on one of your interviews, you said that if they did a digital footprint on executives and, you know, the directors, that if the workers, you know, high achievers and directors were working like 60 plus hours a week, that there could be mental health problems quite quickly. Why is that? Are we working too hard?
Physical problems. So the answer is yes, because it's not a hypothetical. What we can actually do is we do all these surveys and we say to people, are you working flexibly? And they say, oh, yes, I am. And I train my kids' soccer team on Wednesdays, and that's fabulous. And then when you take a digital footprint of what they're actually working, those hours, you know, 60 would be a short week. They're working much more, many more hours. And so when we start to look at things, I think the best research that I saw was a book called Dying for a Paycheck from 2018.
I love the title, Dying for a Paycheck. Wow, that is definitely working to live, isn't it? Living to work.
Yeah, and you do have to have a fictional book or The Greatest Show Tunes or something nearby after you've read it, because it's quite a depressing read. But he talks about the fact that the physicality of work and the hours that we're working and the way that we're approaching it is so horrible for us physically and mentally, and obviously they're deeply connected, that he, after six doctorate studies, which is what he sponsored and worked with, that actually shown that the work as a cause of death is actually the fourth cause of death in America, and actually sits higher than diabetes.
Wow.
And that's just so hours.
We're just not built. We're not built for this. We're not built to work the hours that people are working.
Or the way that we're working. I think it's things like the really crazy stress intervals. So we've got very efficient and productive. So we have these meetings where every topic only goes for 15 minutes. But actually, that's to try and have an opinion, get into a decision, be part of
that's
something
quite stressful.
That's discussed. Very stressful. And if you're in a meeting for 4 hours and you've got, you know, 4 hours worth of 15-minute intervals, all different topics, all of them are important, you know, all of them have...
And everyone wants to have a say and people want to impress and people want to feel like they're doing their job and delivering. That's a lot of stress in 15 minutes, isn't it? Like, we're trying to push a lot of high-level activity and thought and interaction in such short time frames because we feel like we've got to keep producing more and more and more in shorter time periods.
Yeah, and also we're not listening to the conversation, so the quality of decisions in that time are pretty rubbish because we've got our one sentence we want to say. So when someone else is making a really good point, we're too busy waiting for our chance to say the one sentence to actually go, oh, my goodness, that point you just made was awesome. Changed my mind. I want to go with you. So we're not building on each other's thinking or ideas. We're not actually working together. We're just it's more or less like a puppet show or a play to turn up to be involved but actually not.
Do you think it's the processes? You think it's how we're working and that's how we could make work more human by looking at the processes and by how we interact and what we're actually doing with work and how we're doing it?
Yeah, I think the processes and the way that we've got things structured is certainly part of it. There's certainly who we allow to come into work. So we end up having workplaces where everybody's quite, they're all very similar. And then we have all the ways of this is how you must fit in here, this is how you must look and be. And we forget that actually having people who turn up and say the wrong thing at the wrong time that's actually quite funny is actually could make a meeting much, much more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, and absolutely. And so, it helps relax people and it helps people to think of different ideas that might be a little bit left field or right field or centre field, but mixes things up a bit and that is actually human.
Absolutely. And it is like human beings have got a couple of things that are really unique comparative to any other thing you can look at in the business. And one of them is that we're quite irrational. So we will do things unexpectedly. And so we will surprise people with our contribution or surprise people with an idea they weren't expecting from us. The other thing is we're very voluntary. So we don't have any limits to us. If you treat me nicely and smile at me and say good morning, I'll give you more today than I was going to give you if you didn't. And that's quite unique. So you uncapped resource. It really is.
So we really are very emotional. So even if we try to have a very rational facade and we try to fit into the workplace practices and the ethos, people really are more emotional and respond more to emotional human responses than the workplace would lead us to believe.
Yeah. And we quite like other people around us. So I know when we're working with people with disability, one of the things that's quite funny is we find a positive impact from employing people with disability on the rest of the team, not just the person obviously that gets to come to work now, which is great, but it's also on the fact that people go, it's sort of cool belonging to a team that looks like the society I came from as opposed to a weird version that's missing half of it.
Yeah, totally. So your background, you didn't end up being an accountant. I know that that's how you perhaps thought you may have started your working life. You moved into HR and into the corporate world, working with some very big companies, resource companies, I think BHP, first you had to set up your own company and with a variety of work and consulting and training with moi. Tell us about that journey.
Well, I started in big companies because I started in BHP straight from school. So they put me through my degree and my postgrad, which was great. That was how it was done. And then I went to big companies. I went to Sara Lee, which is 155,000 people, Luxottica, 67,000. And then I spent a couple of years in the Commonwealth Bank, which is 52,000. So it's the smallest company I'd worked with. But in 2016, we decided to build moi. And what we wanted was a different conversation about work because there's so much PR and branding about, you know, how well we're treating people, how well diversity is doing, how well leadership's doing. And actually, in the absence of being able to have a conversation about what's actually working and what's actually not and how work is changing and what we could and should do about that and what we might like in the future, That conversation is mute. It's just literally stuck in under a bunch of brands that don't want to talk the full story because it's bad for their brand. So what we wanted was a non-branded conversation where we could literally say, how is work designed? What's good about it? What could we change? How could we get better?
So you could say it as it is. So you could say it as it is, not what, not the cookie cutter and not what people want to expect for the big corporate profile.
And try different ideas. Like, so we've got this way, we must be best practices, this best practice and that best practice and the next thing. And actually what we said is, it doesn't really matter if you've got best practice and a bunch of stuff. What you actually need is just everything working really well together.
Because best practice is a lot of stress too, isn't it? I mean, all those guidelines and they keep changing all the time and, you know, and new updates.
It's often irrelevant. Like if you know, I don't know, some other company's done something really fabulous and you got, that's best practice, we must copy. But it might only work in that environment in Spain where they've got that company. And when you try to apply it to a different industry in Australia, it doesn't work as best practice. It's sort of a goofy way of working. So,
so things need to be custom. Yeah, and things need to be custom fit for the organisation itself, the type and the people. So what are the major trends that you're starting to see in organisational change now?
I would say the biggest trend that we're looking at the moment is absolute simplification. I think things have got so complicated that people want the foundations of work, whether that be leadership or core people processes, all that sort of jazz. They want that to be incredibly intuitive, very simple, and they want it to work.
I wasn't expecting you to say that. Well, because we're expecting, like, because it's such a stressful sort of so much information coming at us and through us, with us every day, that I was expecting, you know, to be more layers of complexity, but we're actually, you're trying to peel back the layers of complexity to simplify things, and that's a trend.
Yeah, because they're starting to say, you know, really good conversations about things like the relationships in our business aren't working as well as they should. So, you know, if you go back 5 years, we need a model of innovation and collaboration to put in here and a framework of scrums or something like that. Now we're actually saying to people, what's getting in the way of the relationships at work? What would make it easier for you to get on well with everybody?
And you think that's the core of it? Do you think the core of it is relationships? That's it?
I think the core of it, and we've done a lot of stuff on this, is a couple of really simple things. So I think it's purpose. You've got to do some work that you care about, that someone cares that you turn up and do it. So it's purposeful. You need a couple of relationships, people who care whether you turn up.
Yeah.
It's pretty important. True. And you care about them. You need some agency, a bit of freedom to do it your way as a grown-up so that you're not being told how to do everything, so that you've got no agency over your work. And the fourth thing you need, and this is the one that often goes missing, is you need some accountability. You need people to rely on you. You need to be part of community.
Mm.
And if you're talking to Indigenous leaders, and we do a lot of work with that group, is also that's core. That their commitment to community, your accountability to community, absolutely critical to belong.
Mm.
And that's what we're now finding in normal workplaces. We've forgotten that. We've left that one aside. We've said, you get to be included, but we haven't said, you know, we really need you to turn up because it's important that you do. Mm. Your work is important.
Do you think change is overall too slow in industry and in companies?
I think it's probably both. It's probably too fast sometimes and too dramatic. And other times far too slow. Like, there's so many opportunities that we've got to do things differently or better, and we get caught up in long lists of things. Like, you know, a number of times we see a company and they'll say, we're doing all this change, and there's like pages of stuff they're doing. And you say, well, what difference is each of these things going to make? And often the answer is no one's thought about that.
And why is that?
Really
is it because you've got the same sort of people who are making the same sort of decisions so that nothing really changes all that much, or that's why things are held back? You know, is there not enough different types of people involved in the decision-making processes?
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something there, because I think that there's very much evidence that where we've got the same people in all the same leadership roles, when we start mapping things like privilege indexes across workforces, the senior leadership teams, male and female, have got exactly the same levels of really high privilege in any company, and the next layer down a little bit less, next layer down a little bit less. So certainly the big decision makers are certainly from a very small group of society as opposed to most of us, and that's not helpful. We need more people in the decision-making process. I agree with that. And I think the other part of it is probably we're making decisions on goofy things. So you see people saying, oh, we've got this new model, and you go, that model that you're just putting into your company is from 1996. The chances of it working in 2019 are slim.
Yeah. That's just crazy. And we're thinking about taking trips to Mars. I mean, really, and in some other areas, we seem to be so far behind. There was an article.
It's the human stuff that we're behind on. It's the human stuff. We're still using old models and old ways of thinking about people, and we're moving forward.
Yes. And, are we slaves to our work? There was an article yesterday that was published, and it says, Dad opens Amazon parcel to find notes saying staff are treated like slaves. So a dad opens his Amazon delivery to find a note begging for help and saying workers were treated like slaves. This message was scrawled on brown wrapping paper. Can't be the only company where people might have that message. It's quite a strong statement, isn't it? There's a lot of automation that goes on in those big companies like Amazon. It's a bit of a factory.
That'd be sad, wouldn't it, to get that parcel? You'd be like, you want to go on a mission to go and rescue them or something. But hopefully they're not genuinely slaves. I'm sure there is slaves still around, as we know, but that's pretty sad. I think that there is a debate around how technology is used. That's been a really interesting piece, because I remember having a conversation with a really cool technologist, and she rang me up and she said, look, I love your work on inclusion, but of course it's not very realistic. Thanks. Quite patronising, but okay.
Yeah, it's a bit of a backhand.
And she was saying that she estimated that there would only need to be about 30% of us wouldn't need to work at all. And so I said, well, what will we do? And she goes, well, it won't be you because you've got a good education, so it will just be like other people. I said, just humour me and imagine I'm in the 30% that doesn't get to go to work anymore. She said, well, you could just stay home and, like, garden.
Yeah, right. I think that, well, that can be quite lonely, gardening, as enjoyable as it is.
A bit of a Netflix binge for a few days, and then sooner or later you'll get up off the couch and go somewhere. Like, we're not going to just sit there and go, okay, if you told me to stay at home, I will.
Yeah.
We'll just move. We're free.
And we're looking at the future of work. Is there a future, Rhonda, for work, our work?
Yeah, I think there is. Work is not this thing that we invented. Like, we started structuring work like we're doing it now, the 5-day week, 8-hour days in 1860, but we've been working for thousands and thousands of years before that. So work is our natural get out of bed, I want to contribute to society, let's go. And I think there's definitely a future, because whatever it changes shape, we'll just turn up. Really believe that.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of shift do you think there will be in the type of jobs that we'll be doing in the future that some of us are even possibly doing now in the world? What sort of shift?
Well, I think what we're seeing already, just looking at the hard data, is there's a massive shift. The only thing that's deeply concerning is we're probably not talking about it and preparing people for it and getting ready for it. But there's certainly a shift in what was traditionally male jobs. A lot of regional jobs, these are changing really fundamentally, and the big companies that have got the giant workforces, sort of the omnipresent ones, a lot of their jobs are being automated, and the estimates they'll take something like 20% of their workforce out. And we know that a lot of big companies are already planning that and getting those numbers ready, but societally we can't talk about it because it's like we just want to get angry at them, but actually it's going to happen. So we're better off if we said, this is the shifts that are happening. This is the shifts people are planning. What are we going to do, and how can we retrain the workforce or give people different opportunities? Because we have a few years to get to it. We don't have to do it overnight. But the longer we leave the conversation,
there'll be more panic.
We'll be doing it overnight.
There'll be more panic and devastation, and more stress, and what sort of skills do you think people will be, well, companies and the workforce will be looking for from people? What skills will people need?
I think there's massive increases in things like caring, medical. We're all living longer. There's more medical and medical interventions into us. So huge increases in those sorts of jobs. Research, lots of work back on the back end of the scientific side of research or data and all the work in technology. And then there's also you know, just normal service jobs. I mean, the way that we've approached service jobs in the past has changed quite dramatically, but they still exist. We still like service. We like someone to look after us and help us. Mm. And I think those jobs are all pretty real.
And what about, you know, soft skills for workers, you know, creativity and, you know, good communication?
I think there is certainly communication, problem solving, an ability to get on well with people. Those are all skills that have always been important and they remain important. One of the things I have seen that's quite funny is companies going, oh, we need to train everybody in a certain way of doing emotional intelligence. actually,
sounds, you know, counterintuitive.
Well, it does a bit, doesn't it? And also the reality is, they say all of us are in a family. We're in families. You have people with high emotional intelligence and we have people with less emotional intelligence, and we all get on fine. It's sort of quirky and fun and we're okay with it. You don't need everybody acting a certain way every time you speak. Like I saw one group that had been taught to listen a certain way.
How do you listen a certain way? How do you listen a certain way? Prop the right ear to a 30-degree angle. Then after a beat, you move the left ear to a 20-degree angle.
Percent of eye contact. Yeah, it's really weird. So I think when you start training people to be like that, that's super weird.
And people will feel weird. That is super weird, which, you know, brings me to the question that I have for you. Last week we opened Tech Load with Norik Dilanchian's creative music piece on Humans Will Do the Work. Do you think, speaking of weird, do you think that in the future the people will actually feel a need to have a technological enhancement, like become a little bit cyborg-like or have certain sort of technological devices more attached to their bodies and potentially implanted?
It's possible. It's possible because there's so many, you know, opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
But we have an awfully long way to go before we'd actually be in that sort of position. I mean, I don't know if you've had a good conversation with a chatbot or something recently or tried to get in an elevator that wants to take you where it wants to take you. So there's a long way to go.
You have an interesting chatbot story you were telling me.
I did. I had a Qantas flight cancelled on my birthday, and I was flying home to have birthday with my parents and my kids and my husband. Mm. And the chatbot wrote to me and said, we've cancelled the flight, and could it help me? And I'm like, well, no, you just cancelled a flight. You're a very unhelpful chatbot. So I wrote back to them and said, well, you could get me back a flight because it's my birthday and I want to be home for dinner. And the chatbot wrote back and said, I am a chatbot.
Oh, really? Airline.
I am the chatbot and I'm trying to help you. Please tell me your name. So I told him my name. Please tell me your number. I told him my number. Please tell me some more details about you. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. So I just picked up the phone, got someone to help me. 2 hours later, the chatbot was still writing to me to tell me things that it could help me with. And I'm like, I've already solved it. I already rang someone. We solved it. You're too slow.
Well, you made a chatbot friend by the sounds of it. But it could be eternal if someone doesn't fix that program.
And the chatbot then wrote to me and said, how would you rate our conversation? I really enjoyed it. How would you rate your conversation? I gave him a 2 out of 10.
Oh, there's room for improvement.
He could be a girl. I don't know.
There is room for improvement. What about it? Often it's come up sort of, I think, pretty much in the last year or two, and it's come up from lots of different sources all around the world, and this idea, through governments as well, are talking about it, a universal wage. Do you think, what room do we have in society for that? Is that something that's workable? Will people then be taking the universal wage and be sort of at home gardening alone? Or will there be a universal wage and we'll still be involved in productive community ventures, but still not necessarily having to work for a wage, but everybody gets a universal wage?
Yeah, I had a deep conversation about universal wage with this technologist woman who thought that, you know, nobody was going to work. And I said, well, how will we function? Like, we're just at home gardening, hanging out with our friends, binging Netflix. How do we earn money? What do we do? And she was like, oh, universal wage is going to be fantastic. And I said, it's going to be the same as your wage for going to work. And she goes, no. I said, okay. So it's sort of, there's this people who get lots of money for going to work and people who garden just get nothing. And she was like, well, you can't have everyone the same, otherwise there's no motivation. I'm like, well, sure. But if you tell 30% of population you're going to set a wage for them that you get to set, I think we'll have an opinion on that. I think we'll say, no, I don't like what you've given me. I want different. I want more. I want an opportunity myself. And I think that's where we're sort of underestimating that you can divide society up and go, these people will be fine like that because they're sort of lesser than, mm-hmm. and the rest of us need more than because we're more than. And I think human beings are of equal value, and we need to start thinking like that. What does society look like in the future where people can be treated with respect and dignity, regardless of their ability to be included or not included in a particular group?
Mm. And what are companies doing now to allow people to be more inclusive?
Well, they're starting to think. We're starting to think very differently about it. So certainly, there's good technology that enables us to make work more accessible. So, for example, geographical dispersion, or if you're have a disability that means that you can't leave your home easily. So at the moment, you have to get a carer and you have to get special taxis and everything else. We can actually join people from their home or from wherever they happen to be into a virtual meeting through virtual reality now. We can do that today, and that works really brilliantly. And that means someone who's got a physical disability or an inability to get to a workplace
can still feel like they're part of it.
Equal.
They can feel like,
and you actually, that's amazing. You're in the room together instantly, and I think that's fantastic. We can do that all over the world. Mm. So there's technology like that that companies are using. There's also things to rethink mindset and shift, because I think diversity and inclusion, for example, became quite an intellectual concept, and actually it's an emotional concept. You know, everybody, you know, gets it intellectually. It's good and the right thing to do, politically correct, whatever, but it's not until you feel what it feels like to be excluded or to not have any power in the relationship that you have a visceral reaction to it. And then you go, wow, that isn't good. I don't like that feeling. And so we're using virtual reality, for example, to give people that feeling of walking in someone else's shoes, that triggers an empathy. And what we know from this work is if you trigger empathy, you can have a much deeper conversation about relationships and how we work together than you can if you just intellectually discuss EQ or something like that. It becomes much more, people are talking about it in their head but not really understanding the emotional feeling of it.
Do you think there's a lack of productivity in some companies and some departments and some people where there are certain factors that are affecting the potential of the workers' performance?
Meaning if they have a disability that affects their productivity?
Not necessarily looking, but just anybody. Like, it doesn't matter, like, whether they've got a disability or not. Are there certain factors that are affecting people's and workers' performance at the workplace?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the biggest impact is when there's not clarity around the fact that, you know, everybody's here, we're all in it together, let's go, we're on the same page. And when you get elements of insecurity or not really feeling like I belong, don't really feel like I'm part of the gang, I overthink that. I waste a lot of my own headspace overthinking, trying to fit in, trying to read the unwritten rules. And I think that wastes huge amounts of productive time.
Totally. And, you know, emotional distress consumes so much energy and makes people so tired, apart from also making them sick.
We've got a lot of really strange ideas all wrapped up in there that were just for the longest time. So one of the best things I heard last week was actually her senior leader, as we've been talking about, you know, the fact that everybody's got stuff and lives are pretty messy and you just have to roll with whatever's coming at you. And she's just up and said, for 20 years I was indoctrinated to think that every time someone turned up late for their work, it was personally a lack of respect for me and the team. And now I know to just go up and say, hey, is everything okay with you and yours this morning? Are you okay? Because people have got, you know, stuff going on in their life.
They have. And some people push themselves, you know, in different ways and are stretched in different ways. And sometimes they could actually be overperforming and really performing on target. But, yes, they might be late. But they're doing everything else right. But how do you actually, monitor that?
And some days for all of us, just turning up at all is pretty hard. So on those days, having someone dump on you that, you know, you're disrespectful and everything's like, oh, gee, that's all I needed. I was already really struggling to today. But so someone just, you walk in and someone says, hey, is everything okay with you this morning? You go, actually, it's a bit rubbish, but I've made it. Hey, good to be here. That's good.
Yeah. I've got a funny story, but I'm not going to go into too many details. But I was doing a show that, you know, TV program that, you know, involved me looking a certain way. I also had a second role doing some high level sales. I was late, but the reason why I was late was because I burnt myself with my hair curler. So I got this burn mark on my neck. And, you know, I've got to go in. I've got two jobs. I'm doing a live show and I've got sales meetings or whatever that day. And it actually, I don't know why or how, but it ended up being some sort of workplace tribunal type of situation. I literally went through all my emails and all my telephone records and printed everything out in work time in preparation for this tribunal. And I tell you what, they've never been so embarrassed. The amount of time, well, I was the last to leave. I was making calls all around the world globally, and that was just ridiculous. I think they were really quite ashamed of themselves. But things like that happen, and to be pulled out for being late and to have to go through this, you know, process of whatever it was, a tribunal. I don't think it was the technical tribunal. It was the one before that, but, you know, they're just definitely investigating the matter and HR involved. Is very stressful. Those things are very stressful, and sometimes management makes the wrong decision.
We had a very key example of this the other day. We had a person who said, look, this person is not including me. They don't say good morning. They really make me feel like I'm not part of the team. They keep having team meetings, not inviting me, and then I have to find the team and hop in, and I don't feel like I'm included. And so in talking to them, they said, oh, what should we do? And I said, well, why don't you just say good morning and include them? Doesn't sound like a big
deal. Is that too hard, does it?
And they said, what we should do is we should go into mediation. We should definitely get some mediation. I'm like, what are you going to mediate? Like, I'd like you to say good morning to me. No. Like, it's just such a stupid conversation. And so
that's not even getting to how someone's going to say the good morning either.
I know. But if someone's telling you that you haven't said good morning for 6 weeks and they've started to diarize, then probably you haven't, and you probably need to get over yourself and say good morning. Like, it's not going to kill you.
It's not,
and
is
so
it?
I don't think you need mediation to do that. You just need to get over yourself.
Yeah, and that's just politeness, and everybody should want to bring that with themselves wherever they go, whether it's at work or at the local shop or restaurant. You know, people need to be polite, should be polite, because it's better for society.
And particularly when someone calls you on it and says, look, this is now causing me grief, you think most of us will go, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I've just been a bit preoccupied, I didn't mean to do that. I'll say good morning tomorrow.
Gee, it's easy as that. So how can we avoid stress? Have you seen some good examples of companies that have set up good practices or good facilities or good methodologies to help employees to avoid stress at the workplace?
There's lots of programs. Like, there's lots of, you know, brown bag lunches. I did hear one funny story, and it actually comes from Jeff Fesser's work too, but he talks about the fact, you know, brown bag lunches on health and well-being are pretty funny, because then everybody works back at night and has their pizza at their desk because they worked so long because they had to go to the stupid lunch. So there's things like that. You go, I'm not sure that's very handy. But there's some really good stuff. Like, if you look at things like Mates in Construction, which is a suicide prevention group, they've actually come up with some really good stuff about how to stay connected. And Beyond Blue, some fantastic stuff, really simple stuff like staying connected to people, letting them know that you're together, just simple emojis on text messages, things like that, just so people know that you're around and you're in their corner. I think avoiding stress in terms of the excessive hours, people just need to accept that there's a certain number of hours that we can be helpful and useful, and after that we probably need to rest and have a weekend and get over ourselves a bit. And that's a good way. And probably avoid working with people that cause you huge amounts of stress. Certainly one of the biggest stresses is a boss that's just narcissistic or incredibly difficult. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes when I'm sitting with people, I say, what can I do? I say, you know, I'd leave. So, this person's been for 20 years. They're not going to change.
No, it's true. That's true. You can't go into relationships. You know, you can foster, you can encourage a good working relationship, but, you know, change is the responsibility of the individual, and you can't expect it. So when relationships are toxic at work, where can all the toxic people go? Where's a place for them? What do they do if someone is the toxic worker or person? Like, where do they go?
If you get a leader that is pretty stressed, they'll pretty quickly create stress around them. And so if you're in that around them group, you'll be stressed pretty quickly as well. Like, it's quite contagious.
Yeah, it's a knock-on. So it's a knock-on effect.
It is a knock-on. So sort of finding a way to have a conversation to say, hey, look, you know, been working with you for a couple of months now, you're pretty stressed. Like, what are you doing about that? What's your self-care? What is it that gets you into better shape? And so a lot of the time when you're working with groups, you can simply go through a list of self-care things, and it doesn't have to be formulaic. It's not like everybody needs to run marathons, everybody needs to, I don't know, become vegetarians or whatever it is. It's actually whatever works for you. So if it's a walk in nature, if that's a swim at the beach, if that's a cup of coffee with your mate, if it's a glass of wine, whatever it is, find what it is that really rebalances you and sets you straight again, and make sure you do it. Yeah. And sleep's another one. People start to
Sleep.
Just about how much sleep you're getting.
The diet and yeah, that's true. And I think it's the belief that everyone can reach a potential and everybody can evolve to a better level. I guess.
Yeah, we had a really great breakfast session with a really strong sleep expert. And she spoke to us about, you know, they've got these 40-minute cycles of sleep all night. And it was such a revelation. People went home and sort of started mapping out their sleep. And anything less than about 7.5 hours a night, you're really on borrowed. You know, you're borrowing from the next day or you're borrowing from your moods to get there. So if you just go, okay, whatever time I go to bed, I'm just going to set that alarm for 7.5 hours later.
Totally.
That's a good start.
That's right.
And it really changes the mood of a whole team.
That's right. And if there was more flexibility sometimes with start times, A, it would be less of a getting into work commuter traffic trouble. And, people would be more relaxed and they'd be working at their best rather than sleeping at their desk or sort of disengaged or, you know, potentially being lured into toxicity. Leadership. Have you met many great leaders in your time?
I have, at all different levels, and I think they've got just a couple of things in common. They say, do you want me just to say it? Because I get asked this question all the time.
Yeah.
So I think great leaders are about other people. They just get in there and make a space and environment for other people to work. They know people, they get to know people properly, and that's it. I don't think it's more tricky.
You don't think it's more complicated? You think that's a simple form of leadership and that's all we need?
I know. And people go, I've got a 15-page capability framework on leadership. I'm like, sure. You also just need to get in there and make a good space for other people.
You need to get out of your own way to let a few other people in because
can't. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Because we can't go solo. I mean, you can go solo for some things for some time, but you know, living involves people.
If you go solo, good people won't want to be with you. By yourself.
No, so because the good people want to actually be involved with people.
Yeah, but if you did your capability framework around the front page, and it's to be know your team, create a good environment for other people and give a damn about the people who work with you, that would be the start. Everything else is sort of, okay, sure, there's more, but sure, let's start with the beginning.
What excites you about tech?
Oh, huge amounts of things, huge possibilities, really clever people thinking of really good ideas. I just think it's unending, and I love where it could go. I constantly read it, look for it, talk to people, go and visit people who are doing cool stuff. I think it's huge possibilities.
And what surprises you?
Probably surprises me about tech is that the conversation that they're allowed to have, so few people are joining it. So tech can be really good fun, but people say, oh, no, I can't code, I can't do it. Like I went and put myself in a coding course for a year just because I thought, I better go and check if I can actually do this. And it's actually not that hard. So, yeah, people get involved. And I think there's so few people involved in the conversation that the people who are building tech are currently working untethered to society, untethered to most people, and to some degree without constraints, like without any reference point to what sort of society do we want to live in, how do we want people to be in the society. And so they're just doing whatever they want to do. And I think the more people that join the conversation, we could probably not constrain it as much as start talking about where it might go in positive ways and start thinking about possibilities that are actually good for us as opposed to terrifying.
How do we keep up with the changes?
Get involved in conversations, get out and ask people, read things. There's so much available, but and every so often you'll get like a Netflix documentary to scare the pants off everybody. but get involved and see what people are doing and follow a couple of companies that are doing interesting things. Read as much as you possibly can, but certainly turn up. There's things like the Vivid Festival, like everybody goes around and looks at all the lights of Vivid. But if you actually go and see the lectures and things that they're doing with Vivid, some of them are absolutely brilliant. We went to a a one-hour lecture on digital people and the progress that's coming through and how fast we're now able to make a digital person, which is pretty amazing. And in 12 months, it went from a $300,000 investment and massive amounts of coding and technology to actually being something that you can start to now do on an app, and it costs, it's free.
Wow.
So
that is incredible.
12 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Exciting and scary.
At the same time, I know we had so many different things I'd love to talk to you about, like the news headlines that, you know, you're into all sorts of things. You have, like, talked about the space app, which was pretty crazy because I asked you, you know, there was some news there on NASA, you know, seeing if there's life underneath Mars with their drilling program. And then the tech news of the day was, so we'll end on this, the tech news of the day was that, and this day in, we go back to 1973, September the 25th, there was the first personal computer you never heard of. And I really wanted to capture your beginnings with computers. What was that like?
At high school, learnt to code, did it in a little card and had to punch holes in it. Then we had to take it out the front and give it to the teacher to feed into the computer to see if we got the equation right.
And that just sounds like a completely another world. So I really wanted to end on that. Love speaking to you, Rhonda, and I'll definitely you'll be back on the show shortly, I'm sure. And just thank you
love
so much.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
And great to have your company here on TechLoad.